You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Well, now, Don, it's not often, Don, that we speak to genuine legends. Genuine legends of various fields of life. Sports, entertainment, media, whatever. But we're speaking to a genuine legend today. And he's about to turn 70. He's got an Order of Australia. He got that in 2007. He's won 8,000 Quill Awards at the Melbourne Press Club. He's won the Graham Perkin Journalist of the Year 50,000 times.
Shit.
He's won a Walkley Award, don't know how many of those. He's in the Radio Hall of Fame. At various stages, he's run The Age. He's been the editor of the Herald Sun. He's worked for three television stations. He's been on Frontline as himself. He is a star. And he is, was, and is the great Neil Mitchell.
Geez, Don's impressed, isn't he? You can tell. Look at
no, that. Well, this is my first meeting with you, Neil. Yeah. But you know who you remind me of?
Yes.
An old journalist who was the editor of the Weekly Times, John Balfour Brown.
Oh, really?
I looked at you when I first met.
I remember him. I didn't know him.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
You remind me of a dishevelled Colonel Sanders.
I remember you. I was sports editor of The Age in the days you were playing. And
really?
You hated us at times. You and David Parkin.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought won the media award 1 year for being very cooperative.
Well, how is your health, incidentally? You've had some small battle with it, haven't you?
Or oh, yeah. I'm always battling with it.
So. Are you?
Yeah.
In what way?
All sorts of ways.
Mentally?
You name it. Oh, mentally. That's about the only part that doesn't matter. No. As you said, I'm not 25. I get up very early every morning and I spend half my life in a daze.
So you're turning 70, not 70, are you?
November.
Are you preparing yourself to be sacked?
Well, can you advise me?
I don't mean sacked, but are you preparing yourself for when they say, this has been great. How long do you want to keep going for? Is this just a means to an end for you?
No, I love it. I've been preparing myself to be sacked for 30 years.
No, you haven't.
I have. I've never really thought I'd last in radio. I was in newspapers, drifted into radio and thought, oh, this will do for a year or two. And that was 33 years ago.
So why have you lasted in radio then if you didn't? Wasn't your passion?
It is my passion.
Well, why haven't you? Why didn't you think you'd last?
Because I didn't think I was good enough and I thought that people would wake up to me. The imposter syndrome, Sam.
But is that what makes you good?
It drives you, doesn't it?
Yeah, well,
I'm not really good enough for this, you know.
Can I get back to a question that you asked you didn't follow up? Do you think that getting up early mornings has had a detrimental effect upon your health?
Yes.
In what way?
For years I'd drink too much when I got off. Yeah.
When you got off at noon, you'd go and have a few drinks.
No, I'd go to lunch.
Yes.
And you'd often be there, as I recall.
Yes.
And that doesn't do you any good. And you feel jet lag most of the time. And I don't think I don't sleep well. And that's not good for you. All the research says it's not good for you. So I think.
How early do you get up?
But look, I'm all right for my age.
How early do you get up?
I get up at 4.
What's your day like? How does that work?
Well, I get up at 4, I'm in the office by 5, we have conferences and things and I usually try and get away by about 2, a couple of hours off and work at night.
If I may, Neil, I don't do anything and I get up at 5. Mind you, I don't have the stress.
Australia has this thing called stress.
I said I don't have the stress and the capacity. Do you think you're important in this
community?
No,
what time do you go to bed? What time do you go to bed?
Early.
What? How early? 7 o'clock?
No, not
7:30.
9:30.
Yeah.
Because I've got nothing to do. I just go and watch the television.
When my kids were toddlers, they used to laugh at me for going to bed early.
Well,
I'm in bed now by 8.
Just sitting up for the sake of sitting up seems pointless. I'd rather go to bed early and get up early.
Oh, yeah, but you miss a social life. You're past that, I suppose.
You don't have a social life, do you?
No, I haven't had for years.
So what does it matter? What does it matter what hours you keep? I said, do you think
knocks
you're important?
The body around. Sorry.
Do you think you're important in this? What?
No.
You must.
No. Look, people overestimate the importance of journalists and commentators. You're only got a voice if you've got an audience, and the audience will, as you well know, will jump off you at any time.
Neil, please.
No. Hang on. They'll hang around if you've got something to say. They'll listen in. So you must have you must be very good at what you do.
Do you
to
think
stay
you're
in
good
it for
at
so
what you
long?
Do.
But it's not easy. It's not hard to alienate them. I mean, if you and not with what you say, but if you lose track of what is important, which is dealing with them, is relating to them, is talking to them. If you and some, you know, some of the wankers over the years who've sort of got there and said they were all important. It's not you that's got the power. It's the audience.
So Neil,
John,
do you sometimes? Then plenty of times maybe have to sell your soul, not to alienate people because you think the popular view is one that you should adopt even against your better judgment.
No, because I can't act. I remember when I started I probably tried to do that, but I can't act, and if I try to do that, if I get up there and thump the table about something I don't believe in, people will see right through it.
What happens if you thump the table about something you do believe in but it's not popularly held view in the community?
Well, I do that all the time. I mean... I'm
but passionately you're pretty safe when you do it. It's
passionately
a safe
opposed
thing.
To capital punishment. I reckon the vast majority of the audience supports it.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
But that's irrelevant.
That hasn't been an issue for years. It's Australia.
No, it hasn't. But it comes up every now and again when there's an abhorrent crime and people say, oh, this bloke should be taken out and shot. But I feel strongly about that, and the audience doesn't agree with me. There are plenty of other things.
Do you think anyone could do your job?
No.
Any journalist who... any
Why do you say that?
There's a level of persistence to it, a level of subtlety to it, and not taking yourself too seriously. And too many journalists these days take themselves seriously. They believe that they are the power.
Yes. You don't think you take yourself seriously?
This is
not a loaded question. It's a genuine question.
At times I probably do, but I try not to. I get back to that point. I'm not the important thing. The audience is. And you know me. You've seen me have bad ratings over the years, and I'm tearing
not
my
many.
Hair out and saying, well, I've been a few. And I know that you can lose that contact with the audience and suddenly you're yesterday's news. Now, when that happens, I'll get the sack. I hope, actually, I'll pull the pin before that happens.
Do you have to reinvent yourself?
Yep.
Regularly. And have you got a team of researchers that help you in that way, or do you do all of that research yourself?
I know, I've got researchers, but it's not a democracy. I run it, and what I say goes, and it has to be that way because it's my name on the line. But I've occasionally have a look back at program diaries that I've kept over the years, and the program that goes to air now bears absolutely no resemblance to even 5 or 6 years ago.
Why? In what way?
Because I've refined it. For example, I use calls in an entirely different way now. I've got a more flowing style. There's a bit more humour in it, a bit more relaxed in it, a bit more of using the experiences of the audience, just things that have evolved because talk radio's got this thing nobody else can do, which is this live talk back. I mean, it can be done on TV, but it hasn't worked, and it could still be done on TV. But we've got a... We've got to use that and exploit that, and I try to do that. I try to exploit the audience in the nicest way.
Do you listen to yourself?
No.
No. So that's based on diary notes that you assessed? Yep.
Look, occasionally somebody says, oh, you should go and have a listen to that because you're an idiot or you did something wrong or you offended me, and I'll go and have a listen, but I hate it.
Do the management ever call you in and say, you're not woke enough, you're not up with the times, you better listen to what you said about this? Do they have an input into how you speak and what you say at all?
Well, no, only in that they'll sack me if they don't like what I'm doing. But no, I've never been... years ago when I first started, the management tried a couple of times and it ended in disputes. I very nearly quit a couple of times.
Did you? Over what, could we ask?
Oh, yeah, there was one time where I'd actually started a campaign about something at State Parliament and the Speaker was unhappy and had rung one of the chairman, I think it was the chairman of the company, and said I had to be brought into line.
The chairman was the Country Party bloke who owned the station.
No, it was before his time. That was Peter Nixon.
Yeah, Peter Nixon.
This was a bloke before his time. Jeff Crawford Fish, I think, was his name. Anyway, they threatened me and I stood my ground and stamped my foot and... It all went. Actually, I won an award for that story too.
One of your 50 quills?
Oh, 50
what's your best quills. Story? Give me two stories. One newspaper and one radio.
The best radio story I did, I think. Well, there'd been a couple. You know, we had speed camera tickets reversed to a cost of $26 million. They got the speed cameras wrong. They wouldn't admit it. We proved it. We put this bloke in an old racing car driver, a 120Y, Datsun 120Y, that had been booked at 180.
And I remember that.
We took the car out in the road and it got to 110 and started to fall apart.
I remember
that. And $26 million worth of tickets refunded out of that. I was very proud of that.
So what were you saying, that the cameras weren't really –
they were dodgy. The cameras were – this is under Steve Brack, so it's a few years ago. The cameras were malfunctioning, yeah. And all up, these people have been booked. Sorry,
follow John. Up to Don's question. What took your emotion most in any interview or any subject you've spoken about or took your breath away, for example?
A couple of emotional ones. Little Tyler Fishlock, the little boy who lost his both eyes to cancer.
Yes.
He was his mum contacted us. He was a toddler and he's had one eye removed and he's about to have the other eye removed. And they were desperately trying to get some Richmond players involved with him before he lost his sight. And they'd contacted one of the FMers who thought that's a good idea and played some music. And they got onto me and we, the Richmond players, to their credit, Nathan Brown went out. I can't remember, but a number of Richmond players went out and had kicked a kick with him and the next day went off and lost his eye. And I went and spent a bit of time with that kid, and that I found very emotional, very emotional.
Now, you said that radio is a little different from television because it's an instant audience that you talk back to, and you can do it on television, but not to the extent. So it seems innocuous that innocuous, I think, is the word, that you didn't make the transition, great transition, I think it'd be fair to say, from radio to television. You've had two or three goes at it. Is it not your medium, or did you not feel comfortable in the medium that you're in of television?
No, it's not my look. Whenever somebody says he's been on three TV networks, I think, well, there's a sign you've failed. You've been on all three. No, it's not my go. I do it differently now. I think we could do it better now. But no, it's not. I don't know why. I don't know. I just maybe it's I've got a bad head. I don't know what it is.
I was going to say, do you think you have you're sexy? Do you think you have some sort of appeal for television? Could you? There's plenty of people who was.
Rosemary Margen, the late Rosemary Margen, who was a television legend, of course, and my sister-in-law.
Yes.
Once said to me, "You should work on television if you've got a bit of a twinkle in your eye, and you look like you're cheeky and you're about to do something a bit different." And she said, "I reckon you can do that," but I never could. I don't know why. I think it's so artificial, formatted. What you did wasn't. I mean, it was like radio on TV, the footy show, because it was so free-flowing. But I just felt restricted. I did a lot of documentaries that rated very, very well.
Yep.
But, you know, you'd spend 6 months filming something and then you'd sit down and look at it and say, was that all there is? You know, it didn't have the buzz of radio. So but I didn't succeed. I'm not saying
so you prefer radio or journalism?
Well, it is journalism, what I do. But
print.
I get more of a buzz out of radio now, but I did love it. I remember working in – I was editor of the Herald the day that the Russell Street bombing happened.
Really?
It was a very, very dramatic day. It was a Thursday. It was about now. It was a Thursday before Good Friday. And
so you must have been young then.
Yeah,
young
I was about editor. 32, I think I became the editor. And there were no other papers for 3 days or something. So we worked our guts out. And that – I remember, you know, sort of designing a page and – off it goes to the print and then to the press and then you design another one. That was a buzz too. But radio is a more immediate and satisfying thing.
So you said you may, I think, I'm not, you back me up here, Rocket. I think you said you may stay on for, you were deciding how long, if the management didn't come to you, you were deciding how long you'd stay. I noticed I didn't see you in the rich list that just came out, but you must... you must do extremely well in, I'm sure it's performance based, but that would be just as an aside because you perform every time there is a ratings. How long do you think you will stay doing this?
I don't know. I'm out of contract.
You must have some idea.
I'm just about to come out of contract.
When?
Middle of the year. It was due to expire the end of last year and I said, no, I'm not ready. I want to think about it because last year was such an horrendous year. I broadcast from home for the whole year and I was totally absorbed by what we were doing. It was like counselling 500,000 people a day at times.
So
I'm made a contract in the middle of the year and I'll start negotiations in a few weeks.
So could I be so presumptuous as to ask, when you get to slug it out with the management, Will it be purely a fiscal decision?
No, I think that'll be the
No. Well,
I mean, look, I'm well paid, but I'm not paying anything like the Sydney levels or the television levels. I mean, I'm comfortable, but I'm not rolling in money, and it doesn't worry me.
But you're probably not as highly paid as your Sydney counterparts because they'll do live ads and they will...
That's part of it, yeah.
You won't do those? No. Why won't you do those?
Oh, it's an ethical objection. I'm a journalist and I think it's a conflict. If I'm... For example, I remember they wanted me to do ads for one of the airlines. I think it was TAA.
Yes.
Might have been... I think it was TAA.
TAA?
Yeah, it's
God
that long
almighty,
ago.
That's going
Rex,
back
did
a bit.
You do? Rex did. Rex Hunt did. Something.
No, that was Ansett.
Oh, Ansett. Was. Mm-hmm. They're all the same. Anyway, they wanted me to do these ads and they said, oh, look, it's a gold chip company, nothing can go wrong, you just do that. And I said, no, I'm not doing any ads. And within a week, I'm on air kicking the living daylights out of Ansett for something they've screwed up.
Yeah, no.
Now, you can't take their dollar and then go and kick them. You're compromised.
Fair enough. So you might be bemused maybe by the fact that a man you have regularly on from the AFL, Gil McLaughlin,
oh,
is doing
McDonald's ad.
Pardon?
The Macca's ad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was amazed. I'm going to ask him about it on Friday.
Well, we're amazed that it's a pretty pure old tricky dinky little ad. Amazed that the head of the biggest sporting organisation in the world will be doing ads for a junk food place, which is a great company, McDonald's. But on the one hand, they're saying, "Oh, we're going to restrict advertising to underage people for fast foods," and the next minute, the boss of the AFL is doing an ad for him.
Well, he's so self-righteous and everything else, isn't he? I like Gil.
Hey, is this your regular guest?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of regular guests.
Uh-oh.
No.
Yep.
A successive of premiers have had free entree onto your platform, to your show, the Neil Mitchell Show, to espouse anything they want to, except one, of course. Why won't the current premier be part of your weekly dissemination of information? What has gone awry there, would you think?
He doesn't like criticism. He doesn't want to answer questions.
But none of the premiers would like that.
No. I guess he doesn't think it matters. I mean, he really is putting a lot of your money into manipulating and managing social media. That's their whole strategy. You can put a little thing on Twitter or on Snapchat and you don't have to answer any questions, and that's where their strategy is. He's also got a personal thing against me, which goes back to a stupid misunderstanding. He thinks I had a go at his wife when she crashed into the kid down at Blairgowrie. And I didn't. I had a go at the police because they didn't breath test her. They should have. She wasn't over the limit or anything. It was the police fault, not her fault. Now, a number of ministers have told me he's got... he resents that. He says I went after his wife. I sent a tape to a couple of ministers and say, I didn't get him to listen to this. And they said, you got no hope. So there's a whole lot of reasons. One of them is, or some of them are personal.
Is he a flawed individual?
Well, of course he won't talk to me. No, I think he's flawed, yeah, because I think he's too much of a politician. He's all about spin rather than substance. I don't think he thinks through enough reality. I think it's just how do we get out of this? Did you push him down the stairs, by the way, Sammy?
What?
No, but I didn't. And I wouldn't, but I've been a great critic of his over the COVID nonsense. Doesn't matter what you think of, wouldn't matter who's in power, the handling of that has been absolutely disgraceful.
Well, but there's an example. Oh, it's marvellous, it's gold standard, there's nothing wrong, and we've got people coming to us all year saying they've stuffed this up, this is wrong, they've screwed this up. And you go to the government, oh, everything's fine, it's gold, we're doing a perfect job. Well, you're not doing a perfect job, and it's obvious.
Actually, it's a relief that he's not there at the moment, he's recuperating.
Well, yeah, he is.
I'm serious.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, he's not out there.
Molino
is out occasionally, and we don't want to be hit by Andrews every day.
I agree.
And I think it's a great relief.
I think politically it's a good thing for him. I mean, the poor bugger, I feel for him. It's
a
nasty
same
injury.
Here.
I hope he comes good. But politically it's good for him to be away for a while, and he would never step aside unless he had to.
So how carefully... Every time you're speaking about a subject or a topic, do you have to second-guess yourself in case you're a headline the next day saying, this is your opinion, I speak of Jeremy Cordeau, who probably... What did you think of what Jeremy Cordeau did, who was sacked summarily? Is that the sister station to AW over there, 5AA?
No. Yeah, I don't think we own it, but we have a bit to do with it, yeah.
So he had an opinion. You've got to be very careful of your opinions, have you, or not?
Yeah, of course you do. And you've got to stand by them and believe in them. I thought what he said was silly. And I think a lot of people – I've said silly things over the years and had to pay for them. And but that's the nature. You've got, you're doing 3.5 hours on your feet. It's very easy to say silly things. I can sit there and read scripts and things. Any legal problems I've ever had have been off the top. I can read scripts or read notes and think through what I'm going to say, and then a caller rings and says something and off I go and I've said something stupid or offensive.
Do you find it hard to disagree with someone's, as a person or not as a person, their philosophy or their attitude to something but yet like them as a person? Do you find that hard, or is that a contradiction in terms, in your opinion?
I think I do. I'm trying to think of an example of somebody who I disagree with but like. Bill Shorten. I used to like Bill Shorten. We fell out, but I used to like him, but I disagree with him strongly. But it's rare.
What
are you going to do, throw to a break?
No, I'm going to...
Winding me up.
So would you back away from, if you thought he was good for the country, but you know that people would jump up and down on top of you, if you said you thought Donald Trump was good for America, if you thought he was good, would you be prepared to say it and cop the backlash from the majority who round people up just for liking that person?
I have said I thought in some ways is good for America. I've said that on air. And talking about the going against the audience view, the majority of my audience on the phone reaction I get are Donald Trump fans.
Yeah. And
huge number of them. If ever I say anything anti-Trump, it's like 40 Sam Newmans shouting at me.
Well, there were 75 million who voted for him over there, so...
Don't tell me it was all a conspiracy, though. Don't tell me he actually won.
I am saying I think he actually won.
Oh, Sammy.
No, but hang on.
How many courts were wrong?
If you have a look at how they
conspiracy.
Manipulated the mail-in vote, anyhow...
We didn't land on the moon. It was all in a warehouse in the Nevada desert. It's all a conspiracy.
Thank you.
Whose show is this?
Tell me. Oh, go on.
No, what? So, do you know what 3AW means? What's AW stand for?
I can't remember. I do know. Yeah,
you work for a station,
yeah,
and you don't know what its call sign means.
Yeah. What is it?
Alan Williamson.
That's right, the Williamsons. Yeah,
3AW.
Yeah, we've got a photograph of it in the office somewhere.
Well, I would. The people who pay you $5 million a year, you should know what their company stands for.
What does GTV stand for?
General Television.
Oh, that's right. Well, we're the Nine Network. What does Peter Costello stand for? He's the boss.
What's he stand for? As in, what's his philosophy?
Yeah.
I don't know. They've turned a bit left wing, haven't they?
That's why I'm accused of that. My brother, lives on the Gold Coast,
Neil?
He's mid-80s.
Not Neil,
Ross.
Ross, sorry.
Which sums him up. He lives in he wears his white shoes around the Gold Coast, and he's forever bringing me. Why have you gone all left wing on me?
They've absolutely the age have gone left
wing. The age? Don't take them. Don't worry about that. We're not the age. I mean, the Nine owns the age, but the age won't deal with us. They don't like me.
Nine owns the age and they own you.
Yeah, but Nine doesn't tell me what to do.
They indirectly own you.
Yeah, well, don't blame me for what the age does.
Well, I'm not blaming you for anything. I'm just saying if Nine own the age and Nine own you, you're sort of one in the, you're in the same basket,
yeah, but you're
aren't
assuming,
you?
I've got a big picture of Peter Costello in my office, but you're assuming that I'm going to do what they tell me, that they're going to ring up. And they never have. To their credit, Nine has never rung and told me what to do or say. Some
well,
of the
has
others
anyone
have
ever
tried.
Done that?
Yeah,
any,
some have tried over the
any
years.
Any of your owners?
Yeah.
Have they?
Yeah.
What about your political?
Not politics.
Slant?
It was more looking after clients, or
really,
or sporting mates. Yeah, I'd just back off them. Would you just leave them alone? Or I remember somebody when we were owned by Ten. I was going after Big Brother, and one of the management said, "It's the same company, you know. You can't criticise Big Brother." I said, "Have you ever seen it? Have you ever seen it?
Big Brother?
Yeah,
never.
That's awful." It's horrible.
So tell me this difference between the various cities, Melbourne, Adelaide, as far as, well, they're the two that come to mind as far as talkback radio is concerned. It seems to be a very big thing in Sydney. Why isn't it as big in Melbourne? Or
well,
am
is.
I wrong?
It is.
Or am I wrong?
At the moment, I've got the highest ratings of any morning news program in the country. But that comes backwards and forwards. Sydney... bigger city, bigger audience, but it's marginally so. They pay a lot more for, as Sam was saying earlier, to their staff because there's been more competition between stations. Here, you know, if you didn't work at AW in talk radio, you were at the ABC and that was the end of it until you tried...
Yeah, MTR.
MTR.
That's so you were offered huge money.
I was.
Huge. I was. And you didn't go because you thought it, A, wouldn't be successful, B, you didn't want to take the risk, or C... better the devil you know.
I didn't think it would work.
Why?
Well, I didn't think it had a clear idea on what it wanted to do. I would say I'd be arrogant enough to say if I'd gone there, I think it would have been done a different way. I don't think we would have beaten AW, but I thought in the end it just went right-wing mail, and that was wrong.
Which gets back to one of my questions is, yep, do you think anyone could have done your job at 3AW and be not perhaps as successful, but the majority of people's FAM stations, radios are glued to AW no matter who's on it or what they say or what program's on.
Yeah, you've got a certain audience you're guaranteed at AW no matter what you do. I remember when I went on air and said I wasn't going to MTR, despite, you're right, it was a hell of a lot more than I was paid at AW, probably still is. But I said I wasn't going to MTR because I felt a loyalty to the audience. I thought it wasn't, you know, all those reasons. And a caller rang in, a woman, and said, gee, I'm glad that you're not going. I would have missed you. Didn't think she could have turned the dial to MTR. Wouldn't have done it.
Exactly.
So,
but AW has been an institution, hasn't it, in Melbourne. I remember growing up to the 3AW.
Yeah, me too. It has been, and we're lucky in that because you've got this sort of, right, you don't stuff it up. You've got a really strong reputation behind you, a really strong record behind. It's been very successful. I mean, look at some of the greats over the years in my shift, and it's been a journalist shift.
Murray Nichol?
Like Darren. Murray Nichol was there for 2 years. Darren?
Was Pricey there ever?
No, Pricey produced me for a while. Yes. He's my fault. I brought him into radio.
Then he did the drive thing.
He did drive.
And yeah. You did drive?
I did drive for a couple of years and then moved to mornings in about 89 or something.
Because the gold star position on any radio station is morning. Is,
well,
it?
Breakfast is considered up there, but yeah, mornings is the sort of flagship, yeah.
So
how good's Ross Stevenson?
Well, isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah.
In what way is he good?
Oh, he's got a mind as quick as any I've seen.
Yep.
He's extremely funny. He's got a general knowledge that surpasses most people. And he's got a sense of timing. He's articulate.
And a great lead-in. That's
very talented, yeah, journalist, right, too. Wrote The Games with John,
yeah,
Clark.
Yeah.
That was just outstanding.
Don't call him a journalist. He's a lawyer.
I know.
Yeah.
What did he start at Triple? Didn't he start at, what was that?
Lawyers, Community? Guns and Money?
Yeah, Lawyers, Guns and Money on Triple R.
Yeah, Triple R, yeah.
So, what about leading your traditional combatants, Mr. Laws and Mr. Jones from New South Wales and Mr. Fain here from Melbourne? Do you have a grudging respect for them? Do you know them? Do you contact them? Do you just keep at arm's length?
Well, Laws and Jones, well, Laws is doing a sort of a side program at the moment, but Jones is gone. Of course, I respected their success. I mean, Laws invented it, really, talk radio. He really invented how to do it, and he did a great job. Jones, you look at his success rate. I often listen to his program trying to learn things, and I couldn't work out why it was so successful, but it was enormously successful. John Fain works for the government now.
Really?
He did that advertising campaign on during COVID, the middle of the year. He organised that for him.
So it was not that it really mattered with John Fain because they're not into the ratings, I don't think, are they?
Well, yeah, they used to say that.
They weren't. But there was a great competitiveness there. Do you get on with John Fain or you don't?
I thought I did. I've never had a problem with him, but he's had a problem with me occasionally. We did an appearance together at the press club, which got a bit unpleasant.
Is that professional jealousy, is it, do you think?
No, just ABC arrogance. They're all arrogant there.
Are you a believer?
In what?
Are you a Bible? Do you have a churchgoer? Do you believe in something else besides yourself?
I believe in a God, yeah. It's not a church God.
You believe that there's something above our mere existence here?
As Ross Stevenson once said, all this happening, it can't be a joke. It has to be fair dinkum somewhere. And it's true. Something's going on. I don't know what. Or I don't know who or how.
Were you a reveller in your early days? Did you let your hair down? Did you swear and cuss and drink?
Yep. All that. I had 4 years reporting Trades Hall for The Age, and I think we went to dinner every night. Got drunk with Bob Hawke every other night.
What's the best film you've seen? What do you like to watch, if anything, on the television?
I don't watch anything. I watch the news. The news, current affairs, which is boring. Movies, Schindler's List stands out to me.
Do you have family? Which
I tell you what, Catch 22, the very early versions.
Yes, Catch 22.
Love that. And the world, Schlock the Banana Monster.
The what?
Schlock the Banana Monster. Evil Roy Slade. You seen Evil Roy Slade?
I have not seen Schlock the Banana Monster. No, I have not.
It's a terrific movie.
Well, I'll have to take that on advisement.
What's the future of newspapers? They're becoming very, very, very thin. Is there a future for them?
Not in print shape, no. I think the print versions will gradually disappear. I think The Age, a few years ago, seriously looked at winding it right back. I think they'll disappear and it'll all be online. There'll be a form of journalism there, but it won't be newspaper journalism, sadly. I mean, my son wanted to be a journalist, and I got John Zrell to help talk me out of it. I sent him into the Channel 9 newsroom, and Zrell said, I'll show him how not to be a journalist. That's because I think journalism's stuffed.
Now, really?
I think it is. I think, the number of jobs has shrunk. I think it'll continue to shrink, and I think it'll turn into clickbait nonsense rather than... There'll be a little bit of serious investigative stuff, but not a lot.
What about weekend papers?
Well, they'll continue.
Especially the Sunday papers.
I think one of the areas I would hope that'll thrive is continue to thrive is sport, because I've always been a real admirer of top class sports writing. You know, somebody who'll go and watch a footy game or a horse race. Remember, Liz Carline would do it with a horse race. He'd watch that horse race. He'd watch the Melbourne Cup, and within minutes he's taking you through it step by step. A few people can do it in an entertaining way with a footy game. You don't want to say a handball kick, you know. But what made the difference? How do you analyse it? How do you explain it? If you look at Liz Carline's writing, and he was a mentor of mine. He's absolutely a great man. And if you look at his writing on racing, if you could translate that to all sport, newspapers wouldn't die.
His son's not a bad journalist either.
Patrick, he's top operator. Really good operator. He reckons his dad nearly disowned him, though, because he couldn't ride a horse.
Well, he knows a bit about them, which surprises me.
But me too.
He just throws in a pearl of wisdom just occasionally. Thinks, shit, this bloke knows what he's talking about.
He even looks like Les.
Now, I dipped a toe in the water early by asking you this.
Yes.
But you're 70. I don't want to – you're 70, coming up 70. Do you find it hard to reconcile yourself with those who get aggrieved and offended and horrified at wokeness about political correctness and what's going on in the world? Do you think that is just so much nonsense, but you have to toe the woke line in order to be relevant and accepted?
No, I don't think I toe a woke line. I think I have... matured in some of my views, and I think some of my views are probably now considered more woke than they once would have been. I think that we all learn along the road, and I think I've learned some things.
Is that mellowing?
Possibly it's mellowing. Possibly it's just being exposed to more people and more ideas. I mean, I was one of the strongest supporters of marriage equality on radio in Victoria. I'll never forget, I was about to... Joe Hockey was then treasurer, was waiting to come on, and the producer said to him, O'Neill's just doing an editorial on gay marriage. And Joe said, you'd hate that, wouldn't he? Well, no, I support it. I think, and the world hasn't turned inside out. But once upon a time, I would have said, no, why would you do that? Two blokes getting married or two women getting married. I changed my mind. Is that woke? Probably is.
No, I'm not sure that that's woke.
Okay.
But... I'll never understand why. So do you, this is just a specific question, do you think it reasonable and fair that biological men can decide to play biological women's sport by just saying that they are women and enter into the realm of women's sport? That to me is, I don't care if you think that's transphobic or whatever, that just seems so illogical, and I'm not sure why women's advocates don't rail up against that, because that is to me absolute nonsense.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think maybe some women's advocates do rail against it a bit quietly, but they're probably being woke.
But that's the point. We are so scared of being, we are so intimidated by minority groups. Do you ever fear being culture cancelled?
No. Doesn't worry me. If it happens, I'll go. I'll go and do something else. Wouldn't worry me.
Neil, you mentioned before about sporting journalism. One of my banes of contention is I don't read football reports because all the journos do is go and get the statistics and quote the coaches. Whereas once upon a time, being a footballer, I could actually learn by reading a review of a game. I could learn and use it myself in my own game or learn something about the opposition. Are there any decent journalists nowadays who could write about football, or have you have got to play the sport and have a bit of a journalistic bend to give what's missing at the moment?
I used to like Teddy Hopkins' stuff when he was writing, and there's a bloke who had played it a bit. I think that it's changed now. They're writing about politics and people, and that's fair enough. In fact, I started a bit of that when I was at The Age myself. But we still had writers like Jeff Slattery who could sit down and analyse a game properly. Trevor Grant, Mike Cowell. We had people who were capable of it. It's gone out of fashion probably because now every game's on TV. You know, when I was sports ed, we had every game on Saturday afternoon and only a couple on TV and a couple on radio, so people would want the detail. But I still love that analysis. But I don't have as many footballers these days who are actually able to do it.
There's been one or two that have gone through.
The guy from Footscray.
Young Tim Boyle, who played a few games at Hawthorn, writes a good article.
Murphy, yeah? Yeah, Robert Murphy?
I quite like his stuff, yeah. It's more behind the scenes than the game.
Yeah, the game itself.
Is it possible for you to have a cordial relationship with your critics, no matter how severe they are? What do people criticise you most for being?
Conservative.
That's so you don't take many chances, you think, do
no,
you?
No, I'm politically conservative, for supporting a conservative line politically. That's what I'm most criticised for.
Are you unusual at being a journalist and being conservative?
Not in radio. In newspapers, yeah. Not in commercial radio. But in newspapers, I was a unionist myself. I was probably left-leaning as a kid, but I grew up.
Do you think we overestimate the intelligence of the rank and file, the public, the people out there?
You once told me, I'll never forget this, I was tearing my hair out after a bad ratings day, and you said, what are you worrying about? You got a bunch of idiots out there in their moccasins and their T-shirts deciding your future.
I don't think I would have said that, but I would have said, I would have said, don't overestimate the intelligence of the public.
No, you gave me the moccasins line. I'll never
Did
forget
I?
It. It helped.
Now, look,
no,
Neil.
I can't remember the question. It doesn't matter.
Do you think the public aren't as smart as we give them credit for?
Oh, I reckon that the public is smarter.
Exactly.
Do you?
I really do.
Yeah.
I really do. They don't get conned on many things. You ask any of the dodgy politicians that.
Well done. I think, you're dead on, especially when it comes to elections. Kennett lost the election that he shouldn't have lost, and Shorten, how, you know, the people woke up to Shorten in the last election. Morrison got in. I don't think you can fool the general public.
John Howard once said to me, the public never get it wrong.
Yeah.
He said they didn't get it wrong when they threw us out.
Unless Don's got anything else, this is the last question from me, and we appreciate you coming on, the great Neil Mitchell.
Pleasure. I'm 70, nearly 70, you know.
So
how many times have you mentioned that?
Well, I only mentioned it because...
How old are you?
I'm 75. I only mentioned it, Neil. It's not an ageist thing, but this wokeness has gone... It's going to end up going around and biting itself on the bum, this wokeness thing. It is absolutely nonsensical and people are taking advantage of it. No one's game to push back on it. Now,
I want to ask you this.
Intro. Having one more go at this.
Yes.
Your contract comes up in the middle of the year.
Yes.
Money aside.
Yes.
Are you likely, more likely to go for another 2 or 3 years, or you say, I'm sick of getting up at 4 o'clock, there's far better things to do, I've got millions of dollars in the bank, I'm living the life of Riley, I'm going to snatch it, and who would you like to replace you, do you think?
I think I'm more likely to keep going a bit longer. I don't think I'm ready to step down yet, but I want to get out before I'm embarrassment or before I'm pushed out. I want people to tell me, time you went, get out. And I'll go gently and quickly and quietly. But I think I'll do a bit longer. I think there's a bit left in me yet, but we'll see. I've got to decide probably in the next 2 weeks.
In the next 2 weeks?
Well, I promised last time I talked to them, I said I'll take Easter off and have a think about it. I've got a couple of weeks off over Easter, I'll have a think about it. They're not throwing money at me though, Sam. Can you negotiate? They're not. I said, can I have the office Ferrari once a week? I did.
And the private jet to the Azores every now and again. Now, do you think, just here's a question from left field.
Yep.
Do you think maybe when you step down, they might see what Eddie's doing and ask him to take over?
I know Eddie's putting his hand up pretty quickly. How's he going?
What did you say?
Eddie's always made it clear he'd love to do it.
Take your job?
Yeah.
Has he?
Yeah, and good luck to him. He's well entitled.
What did you think of what they did to Eddie? What happened to
him? I thought he had to resign.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I did.
We had this texting back and forth, didn't we?
I thought it was ugly the way it happened in the end, and he deserved better than that. He'd done enormous things for that club. And he's good. As you know, he's a decent man. But I think think he had to go. And I think after that press conference. I thought he had to go before it, but after the press conference, there was no question. I mean, you're exposing what is a massive problem. You've been in charge of it, but you're going to stay and fix it. It doesn't work that way.
Well, it was an AFL problem. They just honed in on the most important club in Australia.
But the real problem with Eddie has been, we've disagreed, and I don't know if he's even talking to me at the moment because he doesn't answer texts, but that happens with a few people. My biggest problem with him is the conflict of interest. I can't see how you can be a commentator and president of a club. I mean, you're sitting down at the board and you're saying, righto, we're going to sell Nathan Buckley to Melbourne and we're doing the deal. And then the next day you're on radio and somebody rings up and said, what do you think about Buckley? Oh, he's terrific. We wouldn't sell him anywhere. I mean, there's an inevitable conflict there between media commentator. You can't be a media commentator and a participant. You're one or the other. You're an observer or a participant.
You can't do McDonald's ads and run the AFL. I mean, there's conflicts of interest in every capacity of life.
The McDonald's one's a bit less of a conflict because they are a league sponsor. But I agree with you. He shouldn't be doing it.
Neil.
John.
Could I just ask you one question before we finish?
Please.
The state of Victorian politics. Do you think the Liberal Party has a future?
I hope they've got a future in an opposition, but they haven't at the moment. No, I don't think they'll win the next election. I'd be amazed if they can come back enough to win the next election. Though, you know, last year the government was on the nose and the government's fought back. I can't see a leader in the party.
In the Liberal Party?
I mean, John Pesciuto coming back, maybe. Maybe he can do it. Although he's not a blood and guts, knock him down sort of bloke. Michael O'Brien tries very hard and he's a competent man, was a competent treasurer, but the public's turned on him.
So, Neil, I think we've gathered on that in a couple of weeks you'll be saying you'll stay on for another 2 or 3 years at 3AW and then you'll be withdrawing. Would that be fair to say?
No, probably. Look, I don't know. I reckon I'll be staying. Would it be fair to say? I don't think I'll stay that long, no. Three years.
So another fortnight, you'll stay for another 1 or 2 years maybe and then that'll be it.
Yeah, if they want me, yeah. I reckon 1 or 2 years will see me out and see how we go. But you know what? Look, I've said that before. I reckon 20 years ago I said I won more contract and I'm out.
Yeah, turn it up. You'll still be there in 5 years.
Have you got a life outside radio?
No. Well, that's 10. Not quite true. I mean, I've got kids who are adults in their 30s. One's in Sydney, one's in Melbourne. I see a lot of them and spend a lot of time with them. I get out of town a bit and pretend I'm a farmer.
Got a farm?
No, just 5 acres. In
Toorak.
In Toorak with
Neil,
John Deere.
Who actually decides your fate? Who is your immediate boss? Who decides whether you...
Other than the audience.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Who decides if you stay on it? Who is running
Tom Malone.
Tom Malone.
Tommy Malone from Channel 9. He's a really good guy. I knew him as a reporter. He's kicked on.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, though. I like him. I go on well with him. And we're negotiating with him.
And, of course, you'd say that he's a good guy. Why wouldn't you say that?
Well, he is, isn't he?
Well, you would be obliged to say it. That's diplomacy at its best. He's a great guy because he's about to employ me for another 2 years.
He was in charge of you, wasn't he?
What?
He was in charge of you, wasn't he?
He was.
Couldn't keep him under control.
Neil Mitchell.
He told me not to do this.
He did.
He said,
Neil, we have a lot of people.
You be careful.
Watch
out for Sammy.
A lot of people are told not to do this, but without exception, we've interviewed 150 people.
89.
Well, when I was with when I was with Mike Sheehan and Grant Thomas, we have never had one. We interview people. We're not after gotcha questions. We're not after embarrassing questions. We're interested in the people we speak to, and you have been one of them. And whether you like me to say this or not, you're a star, and we appreciate you coming on. You cannot be serious.
Thank you, Sam. Loved it.
Because you ain't